Water.
Let's see.
Good afternoon, committee. A couple of things to take care of first before we move into our redistricting public testimony. Want to mention that Representative Butler will be in at 2 o'clock to testify on his time zone bill. Beyond that, we'll be skipping around our schedule trying to accommodate several members.
The subcommittee going on here.
All right, we will open our public hearing on redistricting. This is the portion of our meeting where we, could I have it quiet back there, please? This is the portion of our meeting that we accept public testimony on redistricting, and I would like to ask anyone here if you would like to testify on redistricting today. This is the time we do it. We're happy to take public testimony. As a matter of course, we devote the first 30 minutes of our meetings on Wednesdays to public testimony. If no one shows, we move right into the rest of our program here. So, anyone on redistricting? Be happy to hear from you. Okay, we'll close the... Oh, before we do that, let's talk about a couple of things we need to adopt into the record, and let's make a meeting announcement about what's going on outside the building.
Okay, right, members, you have some colored sheets in front of you. Those have been sign-up sheets for the next three traveling meetings, not including Medford. Just basically a week before the meeting, we ask that you let us know whether or not you're coming. So if you could get those to your staff, I think they can probably handle those pretty well. We're going to enter a few things in the record. I'm just going to say them so we get them in there. We're going to put in the census data for the cities and counties just because we have it. There's a letter from Representative Greg Smith, a letter from the city of Shady Cove, a letter from the city of Columbus, a letter that Representative Starr provided me from a person at the bank's pharmacy. There's a letter from address to Representative Wilson from Claude and Linda McLean, and a letter from the Cook County Court. So all of those need to go into the record.
All right, thank you very much. And this committee is going to be hitting the road soon, in combination with the Senate Rules Committee taking redistricting on the road to cover as much public testimony as we can. Our efforts to do a good job with that. So looking forward, committee, to seeing you on the road, and some of you very soon. We'll close the public hearing on redistricting, and I will open a public hearing on House Bills 3323 and House Bill 2985. I'll be hearing those together, and Representative Knope, if you would come forward, please. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tim Knope, State Representative from District 54. This bill may be one of the simplest ones that you have to deal with this session. What it does is it's kind of a voter-friendly bill. What it does is it adds the letter C after the number for a particular ballot measure that is constitutional. Some folks who are out there would prefer not to amend the Constitution really for any reason. And this clearly identifies constitutional measures over other measures. And the one thing this bill doesn't do is it doesn't direct the county clerks to rearrange their ballot in a certain way and put the constitutional amendments over here and the initiatives over here and the referrals over here. It just says put a C after the number and be clearly identified for the voters. And it's just that simple.
Okay, thank you. Representative Beck is not here, correct?
Not yet.
Okay. I wanted to take an opportunity to question Representative Beck about the differences in his bill versus Representative Knope's. And he is not here. Let me ask any members of the committee, do we have any questions for Representative Knope? Representative Doyle.
Not that easy, Representative. no, I'm kidding. Curious what your thought was about, I guess, the difference of just adding a C at the end of one as you're proposing, or another alternative I know that's in the works is to just have those that are constitutional amendments as letters like A, B, C, D, while the those that are just amending statutes would be numeric as they are right now.
You know, I thought about that, and Mr. Chair, Representative Doyle, it seems to me, and it could be just me and my, you know, Central Oregon thinking, but it seemed to me that the numbering system that we currently have wouldn't need to be interrupted if we just add the C. If you add the lettering system, to me it's just another complications that the voters would have to figure out. And I, you know, it might be, you know, half a dozen a one on the one hand, but to me this just seems simpler. And you know, maybe there is another way. I know some of the other proposals, some of the county clerks had a little bit of angst over, and maybe they'll testify today, I don't know, but I tried to talk with my county clerks and others to see, and they said, whatever you do, don't mess with the way we arrange our ballot. Give us the latitude to do the ballot the way we want. So, you know, Representative Doyle, I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea of going to a lettering system for constitutional amendments, but it could be confusing. And, you know, the letter C, you know, I thought of a lot of catchy campaigns you could do in order to get people to understand what it is right away, as opposed to having to re-educate our voters about, you know, why is this now an A, a B, and a C versus a 86, 87, and 88.
Thank you. Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I'm one of the parties that has another bill, which is in terms of the ordering of the measures in terms of having constitutional first and then statutory. But I think the fundamental issue is this is a relatively simple thing to do. It's statutory. It's not constitutional making this change. I would suffice with any measure coming and making it out of this whole body that I clearly identify to the public when they are voting on a statutory or constitutional measure, and anything we can do in that regard I think would be beneficial. But in regard, Mr. Chairman, maybe Representative Knope would comment. Changes we've made on the ballot before where we thought we were making something that was going to last a long time, soon after Measure 5 and a few other measures, we changed so that measures would continue to go up in the numbers, believing that we would never get back to Measure 5 or another measure for quite a long time. It only took a few years, actually, to go through the first 100 numbers. And maybe we should have one in to change it so we go up to 1,000 numbers before we go back. And I'm just kidding. That might take us 5 or 10 years.
You never know. All right, thank you. Any further questions for Representative Knope? See if we can ask Representative Beck to join us here. Representative Beck,
good afternoon.
Committee.
Good to see the Rules Committee again. I'm here. I don't even have my bill number in front of me. It's 2 hours later.
2985.
The legislation that I brought forward was brought to me by a constituent, actually, and this was to address try to improve the initiative system in one minor way, which is to try to put the constitutional amendments in a block and put a C after the number so that the voters would have an easier way of distinguishing what are constitutional measures and which ones are not. Pretty basic concept. I'm not sure I haven't done an analysis of how the two bills are different.
Well, I think what we'll do is, after hearing this today, we will take these away and compare them and talk to you both about them.
Great.
Any questions for Representative Beck? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing our bills. Appreciate it.
Next up on House Bill 2985 will be Christine Burke, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Christine Quirk. I'm a partner at Grove Quirk Insights. We're one of the leading public opinion research firms in the nation. We specialize in passing and defeating ballot measures. Indeed, our record is 24-0 on ballot measures, most of which have been here in Oregon. I've been asked to speak on HB 2985. Having conducted surveys and focus groups among tens of thousands of Oregon voters in the last several years over the past election cycles, we've learned that Oregon voters have become extremely sophisticated consumers of initiatives. they view initiatives as special interest battlegrounds that have very little to do with their daily lives and are frustrated with the amount of time and effort it takes to make an informed vote. They're hungry for unbiased information that helps them make up their mind, sort through the legalese, and get to the bottom line on these measures. They're particularly attuned to whether a measure is a constitutional amendment or not. Voters hold the state constitution in very high esteem, as they should, and to them, measures that amend the constitution deserve additional attention and special consideration. In our work, we've seen that voters basically apply three criteria to constitutional amendments. Will they stand the test of time? Statutes can and should be changed, while the Constitution should not be changed with a shift in the political wind. Second, they should address important issues. Voters don't believe that every issue should be enshrined in the Constitution. And finally, constitutional amendments should have a profound effect on the majority of Oregonians. They shouldn't single out a particular group, nor should they benefit a special interest. HB 2985 will make it perfectly clear to voters which measures are constitutional amendments, which are statutory changes, and let them decide whether they're worthy of a yes or a no vote. Furthermore, when faced with the daunting task of wading through two phone book-sized voter samplets books, voters yearn for what we've heard called a Cliff Notes guide to voting. Grouping constitutional amendments together and marking them with the letter C will provide valuable clues and additional guidelines for them when they sit down to fill out their ballots, making the job of voting less onerous and less time-consuming. It will also provide voters with perspective, give them an idea of exactly how many constitutional amendments they're voting on in this election. While conventional wisdom has held that a confused voter will vote no, our research is showing that a confused Oregonian will skip a measure rather than cast an uninformed vote. In Oregon's initiative process, too much time and effort is spent confusing voters, and doing something as small as making it clear which is a constitutional amendment and which is a statutory change will provide more information to voters, thereby helping to decrease the cynicism about the initiative process. By doing so, we will encourage participation rather than discourage it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Mr. President. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3323 and House Bill 2985. And I will now open a work session on House Bill 2702. And I'd like to have Don Miner come forward, please.
Members at your space, you should have some dash 2 amendments, some dash 3 amendments. They both have Don's name on them. Where you explain the difference between the two of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Don Miner here on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association.
Let me take just a second here to don't necessarily want to read to the committee, but again, if you'll pull the bill out and acquaint yourself briefly with what this bill does, take a second to refresh your memory on that. This is one that we heard quite some time back and has been the subject of much work. Okay, Don, if you'd proceed to explain to us about the twos and threes.
Again, Mr. Chair, Don Miner on behalf of Oregon Manufactured Housing Association. This bill requires that a park owner notify a tenant of the improvements the tenant must make when he moves into the park or the facility. It also requires that a dealer or other person who is going to provide those improvements inform the consumer in considerable detail as to what they're going to be getting in terms of dimensions and costs. The difference between the two proposals is that, well, in both cases, there's a written agreement that goes to the purchaser. The difference was as to the legal effect of that written agreement. One requires, the dash three is silent on the issue as to whether or not it's a conclusive presumption that it's the final agreement, and I think it's the dash two says that it is not conclusive. So the reason there are two amendments is the folks working on this have been tussling back and forth. Our group preferred to leave that issue open. The Department of Justice had proposed saying that the agreement isn't conclusive, and I think what we finally agreed on is to say that we're going to leave it to contract law, but we're going to incorporate the parole evidence rule, which essentially says that extrinsic evidence can't be brought in to rebut a written document, I guess, is how that all works, and but it can be brought in to explain the document or to show that there was deceit or fraud or misrepresentation. So that amendment isn't before you. Regrettably, we didn't get that to, we didn't come to a conclusion on this until too late to have it drafted for today's hearing. And what we had hoped is that you would move these over to the Senate side. And again, our preference would be that you move the -3 amendments, but I'm not sure that it matters because I think there's an agreement to finally resolve that last detail and get it done. Cheryl Pellegrini from the Department of Justice is here also. She's
Sure. Mm-hmm. Would you come forward, please?
And help us with that point.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Wilson, members of the committee. Can I see this? Mr. Chair, you want me to address the difference between the -2 and the -3 as to the effect of the writing? Sure. The intent of the Department of Justice was to make clear that the writing itself, while evidence of what the consumer was told, is not conclusive on any issue of law or fact. The reason that we wanted that is because there are circumstances in which a salesperson will make a misrepresentation, or provider will make a misrepresentation to a prospective buyer, to a consumer, to convince them to enter into the agreement. The representation that they make is oral. It's not reduced to writing. And we did not want to foreclose the ability of the consumer to bring an action, for example, under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act for that misrepresentation. And we feared that unless that was made clear by the terms of the bill, that some providers or landlords may have a tendency to hold up the writing as being conclusive as to what the consumer knew or should have known, and that the only thing that they could bring action on was whether or not there were any terms that were left out that should have been in, that the landlord reasonably should have known. So that was the purpose of the amendment.
Okay. So, as I may not be tracking here, but in light of what you have said, it seems like the -2s would be what Mr. Miner would be interested in us in. I refer to page 2, line 24, 25, 26. Maybe I'm on the wrong track here totally, but
Mr. Chair, I believe the -2s contain the language that the Department of Justice proposed.
Right.
The -3s, I probably exclude that language.
Right.
And we have since come to a resolution of these two bills by simply proposing to incorporate the parole evidence rule into the language of the bill.
Okay, so then henceforth, so Mr. Miner's preference for the -3s.
Correct.
Okay, all right. Okay, that's good. Thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Miner, before you go, let me ask you once again, generally speaking, are you comfortable with the direction this is going?
I am, Mr. Chair. I believe that it will benefit both consumers as well as industry.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that very much. Representative Lowe, are you here for this bill?
Actually, Mr. Miner just said what I was going to say, so we'll
move next. Oh, all right. Very good. Okay, thank you.
I'm out of here.
Okay. Okay, we're in work session on House Bill 2702.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gardner.
I'd move the -3 amendment to House Bill 2702.
Thank you. Representative Gardner moves the -3 amendments to House Bill 2702. Do we have any discussion on that? Do we have any objections? So moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2702 as amended to the flow of the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Gardner moves House Bill 2702 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Jennifer, if you'd call the roll, please.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Sherrard?
Aye.
Representative March?
Excuse.
Representative Stark?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Chair Wilson?
Aye. And motion carries. And I'd be happy to be the carrier. All right, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2702. I think what we'll do, since Representative Butler has promised to be here at 2 o'clock, we're going to have the committee stand up for just a few moments, and we will